podcasts to help you reach your positive potential. HRNradio.com.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy, and today's guest, Terry Magro, is an advocate for autistic folks. He has written a really interesting book called Autism and Falling in Love. Terry is now speaking around the country and as a young man has been on the spectrum himself. And I'm not sure if Terry would still think of himself on the spectrum, so we're going to chat about that because he's just done so wonderfully well. So, Terry, welcome.
Thank you so much. Glad to be on the show today.
Sure, it's our pleasure. And so, Terry, tell us about yourself. When did you realize that you were operating a little bit differently than your classmates and that you had some challenges that others didn't have? And tell us about you.
Sure. My parents first saw signs of autism when I was 2.5 years old because I was nonverbal. I was nonverbal until I was 2.5, and that was during a time when autism really wasn't well known in our society. So my parents had to do a lot of searching, had to go to a lot of doctor's appointments, and almost a year and a half later, when I was 4, I was officially diagnosed with autism. I was diagnosed with pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified. So growing up, even though I did start to begin to build up speech as I went along, it was still a very trying process. I was always in a multi-handicapped classroom throughout my entire grammar school, middle school, and high school process. And I first found out that I was on the autism spectrum when I was 10.5 years old. I always knew I was special. I always knew I had unique gifts that made me different than other people. But for me, the first time I found out I had autism was when I started asking people why I was special. And that led to me starting to ask my parents, and that's when they told me for the first time I had autism. So,
wow.
And after that, I really just started to read up on autism. And in high school, I started to become an advocate. And in college, I came out to my peers for the first time about being on the autism spectrum. And that opened a long list of doors for me to become not only an advocate on my college campus, but also in the autism community and today with autism.
Terry, tell us about your grammar school background. What was it like for you, and what challenges did you have that the rest of the kids did not have?
You know what? For the most part, it was a lot of it was speech. Like I said, I was nonverbal until I was 2.5. So even though I started to pick up speech shortly thereafter, I was still at a huge disadvantage compared to my peers. And one of the big things was that because of autism, the numbers of autism when I was diagnosed were 1 in 1,000. I was one of the only kids with autism in my classes. So for me, one of the biggest things in my grammar school experience was the fact that most of the other kids had things such as attention deficit disorder, ADHD, dyslexia. But for me, I was always had autism, and the social and communication difficulties were always something that my other peers didn't have. So that made it very tough growing up because I really didn't have many friends. One of my first friends I had was when I was in middle school in sixth grade, and not being able to have the ability to even speak in full sentences and having a stutter for a while I was building my speech made life very, very difficult. So from my grammar school perspective, that was definitely one of the hardest things, I think.
Yeah. So were academics difficult for you, Terry?
Absolutely. And honestly, it was because of comprehension. Because I really didn't understand how to speak in complete sentences and how the ability to communicate was still something very foreign to me in grammar school. Things like comprehension, things like reading, came very, very difficult to me. Being able to retain information when words wouldn't make sense to me was almost impossible. It made test and any type of exam is very, very difficult. And I usually had a very hard time doing that. So those were some of the big things, but for the most part, it was just the social interaction that I didn't do well in terms of class participation because I never wanted to put myself out there because I was worried about being bullied. I was worried about kids and what they would say when they would hear my stutter, and also when to, like, if I couldn't finish a sentence or I couldn't finish a thought, what would these kids think of me? Would they think differently of me? Would they think less of me? It became a stigma in my own head where I really couldn't branch out because of these difficulties. So it made grammar school really, really tough, especially in the public school. But one of my saving graces was when I went out of district and I was able to go to school for kids with learning disabilities. And that really opened me up to making friends. And it was because everyone kind of just knew they had something that made them special and made them who they are. Everyone had something. And bullying, for me, kind of went away, and I was able to open myself to becoming more academic and being able to do well in school and do well in participation.
My guess is that your mom was instrumental in making that move to the private school. Would I be correct?
Oh, my God. Absolutely. she was my saving grace. She was my coach. She was my best advocate. I owe everything I've gotten to this point, not only to her, but to my dad. And when I think about how far I've come, it was really because they fought the school districts to get me out of district. Because as I talk to so many parents of young kids with not only autism but learning disabilities, fighting the school systems to get out of district is a trying process. Because of the money that goes into having a kid go out of district, it can be a very daunting and long process, which a lot of parents really don't necessarily have the time for. And I was just really lucky to have one of the best advocates around in my mom, who just went above and beyond to make sure that I was getting the best services. And those best services were out of district. So she fought tooth and nail for about 2 years, but we were finally able to get me out of district and right when we were starting middle school. So it was kind of just like a perfect time while I was transitioning through a lot of things.
So I guess the message here, Carrie, is that if you have a mom and dad like you do, that it's life-altering. And they have, they've been the people who have really, as you said, made you who you are. And, you know, you have to give yourself some credit, too, because you've done some wonderful things, which we're going to talk about later in the show, and you've written a book, and I understand you have another book that you're working on or almost finished. So you're kind of an amazing guy, Carrie. And so some more questions, because our listeners want to know about you and how you've made these wonderful changes. I noticed that you don't have a stutter or a stammer now.
Right.
How did that occur?
That was honestly because I was so shy as a kid. Like I said, because I wasn't able to really express myself and communication came very, very slowly for me, I built up a stutter because I was just very uncomfortable with doing any type of verbal communication. So the stutter built up that way, and it wasn't really until I got out of the district when it kind of just stopped completely. So I think it was just the process of trying to be comfortable in communicating and not feel worried about what others would think.
And that's wonderful, because now you are so totally fluent, and I know you're doing speaking engagements around the country, so this is such a great story. Terry, tell us now, let's move from grammar school to high school. What happened next?
Well, the great thing about high school was that when I went to middle school, I went to a special program called the Community Lower School in Teaneck, New Jersey. And this program was for 160 kids, all multi-handicapped classrooms for kids with all different types of learning disabilities. And then after I got out of middle school, I went over to a high school program, which was a joint program called Community High School. So literally the middle school and the high school were right across the street from each other, and most of the kids from my middle school went to the high school. So the transition from middle school to high school was very, very simple for me. It almost felt like a continuation of just school. It didn't feel like high school at all. It just felt like a continuation of middle school, which was really great for me because I was able to just continue to learn at the same pace that I was. And I had really built the structure for the first time in middle school. And having that structure going into high school made me able to not only succeed academically, but it also, again, made me able to become an advocate for the community, because not only was I able to succeed academically, but I was also able to see a wide range of individuals with unique gifts. Every kid had a learning disability, but there's just so many unique individuals who I still interact with today who have so many skills that I really never see in our community today. And it just goes to show you, I mean, one of the best advocates we have in our community, Temple Grandin, says it best when she says different, not less. And regardless if you have a disability or regardless of whatever makes you different in this world, you still have unique talents. And honestly, some of the most unique people I've ever seen are individuals who I've met during this time in middle school and high school.
Kerry, when you were out of district, whether that was in middle school or high school, you said earlier that you had trouble with comprehension. And what was it about their teaching in those out of district schools that made you be able to comprehend better? What did they do?
Well, I think the big thing, there wasn't really a magic solution that made me able to comprehend better, but I think it was a lot because there was a lot more one-on-one training. I went from public school where the student-to-teacher ratios were like 30-1, and then I went to an out-of-district school where it was 8-1. So in every single class I had, regardless if it was literature, English, mathematics, everything was very hands-on, and everyone worked on a structure that would work best for each individual. And for me, one of my biggest weaknesses was always comprehension. So this led me to have a set structure where we would talk about whether it was a story or just like history or talking about all these different things. We'd have a structure where I would read what's on the page and then I would be able to talk about it. And see, we really don't get that a lot in classes with 30 kids because everyone, the teacher is just stretched so far and wide. And once I got into our district, it just became so much easier because the teachers would sit down with you and make sure that you were understanding the material. And that made things a lot simpler for me. I've always still had challenges with comprehension to this day, but it's a lot simpler now because I am more willing to just read a passage and then being able to think about it and then trying to make sure that I understand it before I go on to the next thing. I think that's what out of district gave me more than anything, just the ability to process things and trying to understand it before going to something else.
Yeah, well, this totally makes sense because what you're doing is you're applying a technique that has become part of you to cope with the difficulty, in this case comprehension, and it's a very simple one, and yet one that I think probably a lot of people don't use. And just to review that, when you read something, before you had a chance to then talk about it, now when you read something, you make sure you give yourself a chance to think about it, and then make sure that you get the appropriate concept. So, simple technique, but yet made a tremendous difference.
Absolutely, and it literally helped me to
this day. Kerry, talk to us about socialization in high school, because as we know, for folks on the spectrum, that's always a real tough area. So tell us how you navigated that.
Yeah, sure. Socialization, like I said, I was able to make my first friend when I was in sixth grade, so I was in middle school. And honestly, it it was because we both were literally just talking one day about the Chicago Bulls. It was literally just the most random thing. I heard him talking about, I was 12 years old at the time. So he was talking about how Michael Jordan was coming back to basketball, and he was playing with the Washington Wizards, and then he was, like, talking about the Lakers, and he was talking about Shaq, he was talking about Kobe. He was talking about a lot of things I really had a key interest in. I've always loved basketball, and that kind of led me to kind of going out of my shell and just saying, like, hey, I like a lot of those teams, too. And then we started a conversation, and then I became best friends with this kid. And honestly, whenever I talk to, because I mentor a lot of kids who have autism in high school now. And one of the big things I say is always play up to your strengths. Always play up to your key interests and what you enjoy. And just try to find someone who has those similar interests. Because honestly, at the end of the day, that's the people you want surrounding you. People who you know you can have conversations with who like the same things that, similar things that you do. And I feel like a lot of the time, individuals with autism, especially in that age range in high school, feel so much pressure just to find someone to be a friend with. And honestly, I can say to what I've learned along the way, it's that you don't want to stretch yourself too thin. You really want to find just a few close friends who you can really make a bond with and can have that bond over a long period of time and based on your key interests. It's always important to stretch yourself, don't get me wrong, at the same time, but for socialization for me, I went from learning kind of just through my key interests how to make friends in middle school, going into high school, to then making a whole bunch of friends by taking up basketball in high school. I was 225 pounds going into my freshman year of high school, and I was like 5'9", and I tried out for our junior varsity basketball team as a point guard, and I can literally remember running my first suicide during that practice and literally falling to the ground, huffing and puffing, and not being able to do anything for the rest of the tryouts. I was just completely exhausted, and I came back the second year to not only lose 60 pounds and grow 3 inches, but making my junior varsity team sophomore year. And that's when I made most of the friends who I still talk to this day. And then I went from junior varsity to varsity my junior year, and then varsity captain senior year. And that just went to show me just how important work ethic is towards your goals. But when you have a key interest in something, you have to do justice by it. And that's where I made most of my friends.
What a wonderful story, from a 225-pound freshman to varsity captain. And, wow, that's just that's super, Kerry. And it must have done a great deal for your self-esteem and self-worth. It must have made you feel like a different person.
Absolutely. Made me feel like a very lighter person, too.
Yeah.
I was carrying a lot of weight back then.
It's funny how it seems to me that the thing that we need most with in working with youngsters, whether they're on the spectrum or not, is that everybody needs to have a sense of confidence. And once we have that sense of confidence, it just changes us. And without it, you know, too many kids get involved in things that are not good for them. So I'm just delighted to hear your story. So then after you graduated from high school, then you went on for further studies. But before we get to that, I just want to make sure I give you a number of chances to talk about your book. And Kerry has written a book, and he's been very successful with it. It's called Autism and Falling in Love. And Kerry, tell folks where they can get it.
Absolutely. You can get Autism and Falling in Love on Amazon. You just have to search Autism and Falling in Love. And you can also check out my author page by typing in Kerry Magro, where I also have my first book, Defining Autism from the Heart. So both of them are available on Amazon in paperback and Kindle.
Okay, and folks, just so you have the spelling on that, that's Kerry, K-E-R-R-Y, Magro, M-A-G-R-O. We will be right back with our next session with Terry and hear all about his book and what he's doing around the country.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy, and today's guest, Terry Magro, is an autism advocate and author and lecturer. His book, Autism and Falling in Love, is doing wonderfully well, and I'm delighted to hear that. And so, welcome back, Terry.
Thank you.
Tell us about your book. This is a rather unique title, Autism and Falling in Love. What's that all about?
Yes, well, Autism and Falling in Love is actually a book that I've been wanting to write since my first girlfriend I had when I was 18 years old, because relationships for me were a very, very trying process, kind of similar to making friends. I really didn't know how to go about the process of trying to find an intimate and romantic relationship. I went through a lot of trial and error trying to do similar things to what I was doing, trying to make friends, trying to find key interests that were similar to someone who I could have a relationship with. And long story short, during this time, I started to do a lot of writing because I wanted to write about my own experiences and I wanted to write about what it meant to me to be in a relationship for the first time. So I wrote a lot about my successes with it, then a lot about my challenges with it, and it actually wasn't until one of my most recent relationships I decided to finally finish the book, because I've been writing the book for so long, and I decided that I wanted it to come out this year to discuss one of my latest relationships and kind of just what I learned from the process of it and what I could share with others, not only on the spectrum, but others who have partners who are on the autism spectrum, because a lot of the time what we see in a lot of books on autism is we see an emphasis on children. We see an emphasis on early intervention, the science, the research of it. And one of the biggest things we advocate at Autism Speaks is that 500,000 individuals with autism will reach adulthood within the next decade. So with that, we kind of have to start talking about these topics that adults with autism are going to go through, such as relationships, such as living independently. These topics are so important, and that's why coming out with the book right now, especially, it's been a long time in the process, 7 years, but it's something that I thought was very, very vital for our community as our kids grow up.
Wow, this sounds terrific. This is super. 7 years of your thoughts and what you learned, that's kind of a little different for folks on the spectrum than for folks who are not. So talk to us some more about what folks are going to learn in this book.
Absolutely. Well, the book is broken down into three parts. The first part really emphasizes kind of just my own personal experiences through a love letter to one of my last relationships and what I've learned as a person from it, but also what I've learned about myself as an adult on the autism spectrum and what I need to work on. Things such as mind blindness, being able to think from other people's perspectives, and then other things such as just being able to communicate in relationships and having a constant line of communication between you and your partner. So that's what the first part is about. And then the second part really goes into a lot of the common struggles I see, not only myself, but from other adults with autism and what they struggle with, things such as going in depth about communication issues and empathy and mind blindness, the ability to think from other people's perspectives. And then it also goes into talking about how someone who has a partner on the spectrum can go about how to kind of just make them feel as comfortable as possible and some best practices that go along with that. And then the third part of the book really focuses on the future for autism and falling in love and autism in relationships. And it focuses on kind of where we're going as a society. Like I said, 500,000 individuals with autism will reach adulthood within the next decade. So what it focuses on specifically is that there is going to be a lot of potential for our kids to be in romantic relationships. And being able to show that not only in books, but all different forms of entertainment, such as movies, television, is so so important. So I share a lot of resources from individuals who have talked a lot about relationships and autism, people such as Tony Atwood, Temple Grandin, and also movies that depict relationships, such as the movie Adam, which came out in 2012, and then also Mozart and the Whale, and also Temple Grandin's movie that came out on HBO in 2009.
Yeah. Well, this makes a lot of sense, and what also makes a lot of sense is that with the 500,000 young adults reaching adulthood in the next decade, that's a whole market of people. And not counting the folks who have reached adulthood right now. And one of the things that is a great concern to me, Carrie, and you may have heard this recently, that there's been an MIT study saying that by the year 2025, that one out of every two children born will be on the spectrum. Have you heard that?
I have actually not heard about that yet. That's very, very interesting. But it's not surprising. I mean, from the numbers I've seen just when I was diagnosed, being one in 1,000, to what we have today as 1 in 68, it wouldn't surprise me that those numbers would keep coming up because there's a lot of factors that go into it, but we're becoming so much more aware. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why those numbers are going up. We're having less individuals fall through the cracks, and half of all children having autism by 25, you know, you never know.
Carrie, do you have in your work around the country, and you're talking to people and doing seminars and your work with your book, do you have any thoughts on the cause of autism? Or I'm just wondering what you think.
Honestly, and I say this all the time, whenever I do go speak, I'm not a scientist. I'm not an expert in the field, but I do have my own experiences from what I do in my life, but also from interacting with so many individuals. And the consensus I kind of have in regards to the cause of autism is that it's several different things. It's not just one thing that's ultimately going to be the factor that causes autism. It's really a few things, from the environmental factors to genetics. And that's one of the biggest things I say is to a lot of individuals is that we really need to focus on what's going on right now in our community. There's so much emphasis on what the future of autism and science is going to be, but there's so many individuals right now who are diagnosed and affected by autism, and being able to have therapies and supports for them right now is so, so critical.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks feel the same way that you do, Carrie, that it's multifactorial, that there are a bunch of things out there that seem to be related to it. And I like your idea of better support, better awareness. And we have to, again, take a quick commercial break. Folks, we will be right back with Carrie Magro, M-A-G-R-O. You can look him up on his website, the Carrie Magro website. And also, if you're interested in his book, Autism and Falling in Love, you can get that on Amazon.com. We'll be right back.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy, and today's guest, Carrie Magro, is an advocate and an author, a speaker around the country on autism, and Carrie's book, Autism and Falling in Love, can be purchased at Amazon.com. Welcome back, Carrie.
Thank you.
So, Carrie, I know you're doing a lot of consulting lately, and some of the things we talked about before we came back on air were very interesting. So tell our listeners about your consultant work. What are you doing?
Well, it's honestly been such a privilege to work in a field of the autism community where there's so many different things going on, not only from consulting for parents with individuals with autism, but also it's opened me up to a lot of opportunities in the entertainment industry. Specifically, in 2012, I consulted for a motion picture called Joyful Noise, starring Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton. And the reason I actually got the consulting gig for that was because of one of my internships with Autism Speaks, where I got to get the opportunity to meet with a director named Todd Graff, who told me about a character in the movie who had Asperger's syndrome. So he started asking me questions about my own personal experience being a teenager with Asperger's. And before we knew it, I was consulting for the film. I was rewriting the character to depict as realistic portrayal of Asperger's as humanly possible. And from that opportunity, the movie made $30 million worldwide. It gave me a great opportunity to start consulting for other motion pictures. And two motion pictures that I'm working on right now, which are coming out in 2015, are called Jane Wants a Boyfriend, which actually kind of goes off a lot of the things that I'm talking about in my book, In Autism and Love, because it talks about a woman who is trying to find love in New York City for the first time. And then the other film is called Don't Foil My Plans, which looks at a young adult who's a cartoonist who is trying to find full-time employment for the first time. So a lot of my consulting right now, I'm trying to really make an impact in the entertainment industry when it comes to making sure autism is depicted as well as possible.
This is terrific. This is super. So aside from Temple Grandin, I think we're going to start to hear shortly about Kerry Magro as one of the main advocates in the country, and I'm just thrilled about that because you're from Jersey City.
Yes, born and raised. I love New Jersey, and one of the best things about being an advocate in Jersey City and also New Jersey is we need some of the most support because we currently have one of the highest prevalence of autism in the country at 1 in 45. 1 in 68 in the U.S., but also 1 in 45 in New Jersey. So being an advocate in a community where you can really make an impact for one of the areas that has the highest prevalence is kind of incredible.
It certainly is, and I'm sure that because I know your mom, I'm sure that when she looks at your success, she has to be so proud, and you should be proud of yourself as well, Kerry, because you have certainly come a long way, and not everybody can do what you have done and continue to do, so I applaud you. This is just wonderful. Kerry,
sure.
So tell us some more about your consultant work. What else are you doing?
Well, along with the consulting work, I am really trying to push out my writing to more organizations. Currently, I'm a contributor to the San Francisco Chronicle, along with a contributor to a new site that just started called The Mighty, which looks for inspiring stories in the community of individuals with disabilities. And my long-term goal is to really just continue to keep writing about adult autism-related topics. My next book, which I will hopefully have out sometime in 2016, we'll focus on my college experience with autism. And I'm really excited about that because that's another stigma along with autism and love, which I hope to really help break because a lot of it is still focused on children, but there is going to be opportunities for these kids to have a post-secondary education, which actually made me start a scholarship program for young adults with autism pursuing post-secondary, which we started in 2011, and we awarded 7 scholarships for kids who were going to college. And we actually had one of our first scholarship winners just graduate from college. So the college field and being able to consult in that field will also give scholarships and write my third book on my college experience is going to be one of my biggest responsibilities and priorities coming up in the next few years.
Wow, how exciting. How exciting. Let's go right to that right now because I'd like to talk about your college experience. And, tell us how things went.
Yeah, sure. So my college experience was a very trying experience because one of the biggest things that happened to me was I went from having a regular IEP to having to have reasonable accommodations. Reasonable accommodations is what it basically means from an IEP is that you kind of have to advocate, you have to self-advocate for your specific needs and classes. And for me, some of the things I needed was extended time on tests, a single classroom all by myself for my classes, along with a note taker for all my classes. And so my college experience is trying to that perspective, but what it taught me for many aspects was having to advocate for myself in my classes made me become a self-advocate for our autism community, because being able to speak out about the services I needed gave me the experience to kind of advocate for our community and other individuals with autism in college. So that's really where I kind of got my start. And that's why when I was thinking about what I wanted to do for my next book, I kind of wanted to bring it back to the beginning and talk about when I became an advocate for the first time and how it paved the way for me to be doing what I'm doing today.
Kerry, there are a lot of folks who in college are on the spectrum and they're very talented. And in fact, one of the things that you hear people say is that Silicon Valley is a very popular place for Asperger folks who are gifted in terms of their ability to work with computers. Did you find that in college with the folks that you met, that there were some people on the spectrum who were extremely gifted?
It's actually funny you say Silicon Valley, because for the first time this summer, I met Temple Grandin, and she was giving a keynote in Memphis University. And one of the first examples she mentioned when she was talking about adults with autism is that half of Silicon Valley are somewhere on, have so many abilities in terms of technology and mathematics that a lot of them depict a lot of characteristics of individuals with Asperger's syndrome. And I believe that in many aspects from my own experiences, I was one of the only kids with autism on my college campus. I believe I was one of only four out of 5,500 undergraduates. So for me, I did notice in a lot of my classes, because I was a business major and I did have a minor in accounting for a little bit, that there are a lot of individuals who showed similar characteristics to me, but who never were in any disability support service on my campus. So I feel like a lot of the times, especially for individuals with high-functioning autism and Asperger's, a lot of them can fall through the cracks because they show so much ability in social and communication, that if they do well in that they could fall through the cracks because of autism at its whole being in social and communication disorder. So I definitely saw that a lot, especially in my own college experience.
Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And I want to spend whatever time you have left in this section and also the next section really focusing on your book and especially the things that you learned about autism and love. So we're going to take a short commercial break now, Kerry. But when we come back, this is something that for every person out there on the spectrum who is of dating age, they're going to want to know this. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say. So we'll be right back.
Radio Your Way. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy, and today's guest, Kerry Magro, that's K-E-R-R-Y-M-A-G-R-O, is the author of Autism and Falling in Love. You can get it on Amazon.com. Kerry also has a website. You can go to that, Kerry Magro. And he's consulting around the country as well as now with the movie industry on autism and its effect on children, adolescents, adults, and is especially interested in autism and falling in love. So here we are back. Welcome back, Kerry.
Glad to be back.
Okay, so Kerry, tell us about what we need to know if a child or young adult is on the spectrum and they are
attracted to someone and they're falling in love. And now you mentioned before that you know, there are difficulties with mind blindness, and
yes.
You identified what that means. It basically means the inability to, they also call it the theory of mind, the inability to put oneself in somebody else's shoes or to think what they're thinking. And so that's a beginning. And tell us now how you navigated all that.
You know what? It's still something I'm trying to navigate to this day. Like I say, with most things, characteristics with autism, it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. And you have to take things one day at a time, regardless of what you're doing. And that goes for just kids who are just diagnosed with autism to individuals who've had it for 20 to 30 years who are adults. For me, kind of how I've been able to reflect and being able to help myself on this is through a lot of self-reflection. And that started when I was in college. Being able to kind of be on my own for the first time, I did a lot of self-reflection on just who I am as a person, what some of my strengths are, what some of my weaknesses were. And because college was really the first time I was getting into the dating world, this is when I started to kind of try to understand what difficulties I had. And that's when I started to realize things like mind blindness and things like being able to communicate in a relationship. And that was when I started to start talking to not only people in my family on how to be better at that, but also seeking help from life coaches and other individuals on how I could be more understanding of other people's wants and needs and desires to become a better partner. But like I said, it's not something anyone is going to be perfect on. You kind of just have to take it one day at a time and just try to, like I said, with a lot of parents with children on the autism spectrum, it's really about taking it one day at a time and trying to make sure our loved ones progress every single day.
Kerry, I like what you said. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And I've heard that before, said by folks on the spectrum, and I think it's very appropriate and something for folks to remember, that it's a lifelong journey. And that our ability to stay with it and persevere and keep learning and not give up is the difference between success and failure. Kerry, some of the things that you learned when you were with your life coaches or teachers or whoever you work with that help you to improve your ability to empathize with people, to understand what they were going on, what was going on with them, can you talk to us a little bit about what they taught you?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that last? I didn't get that last piece.
Sure. Can you tell us a little bit about what your teachers taught you that helped with your ability to put yourself in the shoes of someone else?
You know what? A lot of it when I was a kid was social story therapy. And when I was a kid and why I got interested in the entertainment industry was because I was really into television. I was into things I would see on television, and one of the big things with autism is that a lot of individuals, especially young children, can do a lot of repetitive actions. And for me, like, some of my favorite shows were like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I would always like say like the catchphrases like over and over and over again. And my parents kind of saw that, and they were kind of trying to find a way to kind of throw that energy into something else. And that's when I started to get involved with social story therapy and also drama. So I started drama when I was 8 years old, and that gave me the opportunity to play so many different characters, and it also gave me the opportunity to understand other people, because after I started to build on it for a few years, I really tried to put myself into these character shoots, and that kind of is one of the reasons why today I advocate so much for not only music therapy, but theater therapy. And especially with people who are middle of the line to high-functioning autism, because a lot of the time they can be able to communicate very well, but might not be able to understand other people's wants and needs. So I did theater from 8 years old to 19, and that really gave me kind of the understanding that I could put myself into different characters, then maybe I can try to do that with my peers and my friends by really trying to communicate with them as much as possible to try to understand them, and then being able to put myself in their shoes after I get that first understanding from talking to them.
Well, you know, I really love what you had to say about drama, because I could easily see how by being involved with the drama would storytelling and story involvement would make a difference. And I don't know if you're familiar with her, but there's a lady out in California by the name of Elaine Hall, H-A-L-L, who's written a number of books on autism. She's also the founder of the Miracle Project, and she has children on the spectrum doing musicals, dance, theater, and she's her program is now going all over. It's now been. So I love this idea of drama. I love the idea of theater, musicals, and so forth. And Kerry, you have been an absolute outstanding delight to speak with. And I'm very appreciative that you could be on our show today. And after you finish your next book and it's out, I'd like to get you back so we can talk about that one.
Absolutely. I'd love to be on whenever you guys have a free moment and want to talk about autism, especially adult topics. I think it's very important that we make sure that adults are always in the conversation. So I really appreciate your time today.
Well, that's our folks, that's our show for today. Today's guest was Kerry Magro. And Kerry, again, is the author of Autism and Falling in Love. And great job today, Kerry, and we'll look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, folks. We'll be back next week.